Good evening. Welcome to KCSB and Inside Isla Vista. I'm Lieutenant Mark Signa with the UCSB Police Department, and I'm here with the Santa Barbara County Undersheriff, Varney Malekian. Welcome.
Mark, thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad to have you here. We're going to be talking today about the topic of community-based policing. This is something that it's near and dear to my heart, and I definitely know it's near and dear to Varney's heart. He is one of the leading experts, not just in Santa Barbara County, but I would say in the country, if not the world. Just the knowledge base that you come to with this topic is actually amazing. And for me, what I look at as community-based policing is really a lifestyle and a mentality and just a way of doing law enforcement that's really important. It's changed over the years. And just to get started, I'll talk about what community-based policing is, what it came from, where it's ended up, and where it's headed to, and especially how it's affected Isla Vista and what model has worked in Isla Vista, what's worked, not worked, what we could do better, and what things we have to look forward to in the future. It's going to be it's always a challenging place to be and work, and I've been out here 27 years, and I've loved every minute of being out here, and it's something that I've had the opportunity to see the changes that have happened over the years, and we'll talk about some of those. But first, let's just get started a little bit about your background, and so kind of tell people about where you came from and how you got here to Santa Barbara County, and some of the amazing backstory on community-based policing and how you got involved with the COPS program and all.
Well, thank you, and again, thanks for having me on this show. It really is my pleasure. I've been in law enforcement for over 44 years now, and I started my career in Santa Monica, California, as a police officer. I was actually a deputy sheriff in Santa Barbara County for about a year in the mid 1970s, long before a lot of our listeners, I suspect, were even thought about. But it was Isla Vista was challenging then. Those were in the days immediately following the riots and the civil disturbance, and we'll probably undoubtedly come back to that. I went back to Santa Monica PD. I did 23 years there, and then I was the police chief in Pasadena, California for 13 years. Pasadena was a fascinating place. It's a majority-minority city, which is something that a lot of people don't know. It's the home to the oldest African-American community in Southern California. It was a real challenge. I was the first non-African-American police chief in quite some time. And the issues of race and social inequity were very much alive and well there. And challenging, meeting those challenges was fascinating. And we can talk about that a little bit if it's relevant. When I was there, finished there in 2009, I had the privilege of being selected by President Obama and Attorney General Eric Holder to be the director of the COPS office, which stood for Community Oriented Policing Services. It's an office in the Department of Justice that makes grants and technical assistance to local law enforcement.
And I think that's actually an amazing thing to really realize, that how important that is and how much of influence you had on programs. The fact that you got selected by President Obama and Eric Holder to be a part of a program like that. I mean, what was that like? What did that feel when that opportunity came up to you?
You know, it was I was truly honored. I had been at a presentation that was being made prior to the election. I happened to run into a couple of people who were representing then candidate Obama, and I told them, I said, if you guys win, I'd love to come work for you. And lo and behold, that ended up happening. I had the opportunity to travel around the United States. I visited 32 states and two foreign countries as part of my duties. And I think I saw the best and perhaps the worst of American policing. And there really is a spectrum. The COPS office was really created in the mid-90s to institutionalize or begin the process of institutionalizing community policing. And there really are three parts to how the federal government defines community policing. One is the building of relationships, two with the idea of solving problems, and three with, as a result of those first two steps, achieving organizational transformation in law enforcement agencies.
And that right there is, I think, really kind of the key component to what community-based policing is all about, obviously. And it seems to me that that's one of the things I think law enforcement has missed for so long, is that willing to change and work with the community and build. We have a habit of kind of doing things continuously the same way over and over for 100, 200 years, and all of a sudden now we're finally realizing that law enforcement needs a change. And have you seen a lot of those changes over the last few years?
I have. And what's interesting is that discussion actually started much longer ago than current events would suggest. The process, I've watched policing change in a myriad of ways over the course of my career. But probably the biggest one is the recognition that we need to do policing in collaboration with the community, which was not how I was trained in the early 1970s about how to do policing. There was very much a kind of a militaristic bent to what we were supposed to do. There was very much a sense that we are the experts and we will tell you, the community, what you need. If I might share a quick story.
Of course.
I remember attending a community meeting with the then chief of police, and the people were talking about problems they were having in their neighborhood and kids hanging out on the corner and all this. And the captain who was in charge of that area brought out a map and a spreadsheet and pointed out that there were very few radio calls in that area, very few reported crimes, and therefore this meant that the people really didn't have a problem. The reality is that they had a problem because they perceived that they had a problem, and they had a problem because they probably did have a problem and they weren't calling the police. To that end, I think we began to recognize that we could not simply impose a vision of policing on a community.
And I think that's a challenge that you bring up is really important for us to realize as law enforcement, is we have our own vision of what the problem is. We see crime, we see stats, we see numbers, and we just go out there and we come across crime, we deal with it. It seems like over the years that we're finally recognizing that there's a lot of unheard of crime, a lot of crime that's occurring that we're not aware of because we're either not going into those areas or we're not communicating with the public who's reporting these crimes. And that's what I've actually enjoyed about working in this environment, is that when we're building relationships, we're finding out a lot more about what's going on. We're talking to people. We're hearing about issues with, for example, the underrepresented minority communities in Isla Vista, for example, who haven't talked to law enforcement in the past, but slowly are starting to talk either through intermediaries or sometimes directly to us, feeling a little more comfortable coming forward to us. Is that something that you think is that we're heading the right direction? Do you think this is something that's a step forward?
I think we are, and I think one of the interesting things that I've watched take place, particularly over the last decade, is what I call there's a demographic shift underway in policing. There's a generational shift that's going on, and what's coming out of it is a colliding narrative. And in Pasadena, for example, again, as I mentioned, the oldest African-American community in Southern California, there are people who remember when they could not swim in the municipal pool. There are people mm-hmm. who remember when they could not walk east of Fair Oaks after dark. You could look till you're blue in the face to try to find a law or an ordinance that said either of those things. But in fact, that was a social practice, and social practice was enforced by the police. You have people who have heard those stories. You have a generation in that community now who never has experienced that, but they have heard those stories. In the meantime, you have a generational change occurring in policing, and by all the surveys and all the accounts, you have a higher percentage of millennial police officers who don't hold a lot of these old attitudes, who didn't participate in any of that, and really have no historical sense of why the community resents them. And so you have these two narratives bumping into each other, and anything that we can do, by saying we, you and I as police leaders and others, to sort of begin this process of dialogue and bridging that narrative gap, I think is critical.
I think that's absolutely correct. And from my perspective, and again, being in Isla Vista for 27 years, I came in slightly after Rodney King happened. And I was very young. I'm 21-year-old. I'm eyes wide open, just shocked by all the things I'm seeing, not understanding really a lot of the background narrative that led up to that point. I'm just seeing people are angry at the cops. Well, we didn't do anything wrong. Trying to expand our mindset a little wider and realize that it's not so much what I personally have done wrong, but law enforcement as a whole has done for years, and the lack of communication that's led up to these points. If we don't talk about that, we don't actually recognize some of the impact that's had over the years, that's where we're running into the challenges of communicating with the various groups. And then it's slowly, in my opinion, it's changing. You'll see, from my perspective, there's been major points of change. We've had Rodney King, obviously, was one of the big ones in my mind. videotape all of a sudden came in, the cops are being videotaped, we're being held a lot more accountable. And I remember a shift at that point as far as video, you're going to get videoed, watch out for being videotaped, and that's going to get you in trouble. It's been really interesting to watch that as you watch the old school law enforcement officers are kind of slowly fading away from the old school mentality, and there's a newer generation of more educated, better trained officers coming in here that are not afraid of videotape, are not afraid of, hey, I'll wear a camera, record me on the street, that's fine, because I'm trying to do the best I can, I'm trying to do the right thing. That's, to me, a huge change in the mindset that law enforcement's had since, for example, Rodney King. Isla Vista had similar changes like that, and we'll talk about the riots and so forth in a while, but do you see, as far as it takes big events like Rodney King or things like that to cause these changes in law enforcement, or do you think there's a so gradual shift that will eventually continue?
I have believed for quite some time that one of the challenges our profession faces is that there is two, actually. One is the fragmented nature of American policing. When you look at police departments, sheriff's departments, campus police, you have over 18,000 law enforcement agencies in this country, most of them very small. And the second problem is that very often we fall, as you mentioned earlier, we fall into the, when I say we, each individual agency does things a certain way. And absent some external pressure, whether that's a political pressure or whether that's a significant event like Rodney King or like the Ferguson riots, there is a tendency to say, well, everything seems to be going okay, so it must be okay. I think we're going to have to, and one of the things that was I introduced in when I was in the cops office was this process called collaborative reform. And it was designed to get agencies and communities talking to each other and agreeing about what the problems were before you had that big event, before you had that big explosion. And I'm starting to see some evidence. We started out in Las Vegas. Las Vegas has gotten some very positive reports lately, both from the Justice Department and the local media. And there's now about 12 additional cities that are using collaborative reform on a voluntary basis ahead of a federally imposed consent decree, ahead of a riot, ahead of a major disturbance. So I'm optimistic.
And what does collaborative reform actually entail a department doing?
It essentially involves the department and the community sitting down, usually with a third party. The ones we were doing were a third party appointed by the Justice Department. But it doesn't have to be that. I mean, a department could do this with a different third party, but and the idea is that the community expresses what its concerns are. There's a dialogue about what the community sees as its concerns, what the department's perspective is. And between the two of them, there's usually a list of agreed upon issues that are going to be resolved. And the department undertakes and commits in a very public way to enact those reforms, enact those changes over a period of time, usually a year to 18 months. And there's a continual reporting back and a sort of a feedback loop on a continual basis about whether those things are being done or not.
One of the things along that idea, and sitting down with third parties is always nice because it kind of builds trust with both sides as far as there's somebody else listening that's not just a back and forth, tit for tat, back and forth type mentality. It's actually somebody listening that can say, wait, I'm going to hold on here. Let's kind of find a middle ground. I think that's a great idea. I think that's something that's very helpful. What I've seen in some of the tables I've been sitting at, the opportunities I've talked with different groups, is a lot of times it's a sit down and we just throw out, hey, this is how we're feeling about this. And somebody else will come out and say, well, this is how we feel about this. And great, we all understand how we feel, but are we really appreciating it? Are we finding some middle ground? It's just kind of throwing that stuff out there. I think the challenge for law enforcement is that you generally in law enforcement want type A personality. Deputies, officers, to be out there. People are going to take charge, go out there, be aggressive as far as dealing with crime, dealing with issues. It's generally what law enforcement looks for. That sometimes also carries over, though, as far as our mentality as a whole in how we deal with issues in the community, is that we're stubborn. We tend to get real stubborn about issues. And it's a challenge for us to check ourselves, to sit down and say, okay, we're not perfect. We're not right. And we have to be willing to admit that. Law enforcement, I think, is also looking for, though, other people when they come to sit down the table also admit that, hey, it's not just the cops are the bad guys. There's problems on both sides. We need to come find a central group. And that's why the idea, I think, of a third party sitting down is a great idea and something that I think that's a brilliant idea coming up with the collaborative mentality of working on solutions. What do you see as far as Isla Vista? Now, you worked here back in the 70s, so for those of you who aren't familiar with Isla Vista, just a brief kind of rundown. Back in 1970, there was the Vietnam War going, obviously. Ronald Reagan was our governor. And a lot of riots, protests, things were happening all across the country. Well, there's a lot of issues in Santa Barbara involving protests, things going on at the university. There were some speakers that came in, kind of stirred things up. People got upset. Wound up going out in Isla Vista, and some riots happened. And there was actually, there was like three riots that happened in 1970. The first in February, then in April, and I'm sorry, March, then June. But during the first riot, the Bank of America was burned. It came down. Second riot happened, and they'd started to rebuild it. They got up running, and a group of students went out there again and started protesting, rioting. They had another group of students, which I thought was really kind of will lead on to some issues later on, that were actually out there trying to stop it and actually trying to be the intermediaries, trying to be people that would step in and say, no, this is our town, knock it off. They tried to protect the Bank of America. One of those students was unfortunately killed, Kevin Moran. He was killed by a gunshot that came from a law enforcement officer. Very unfortunate situation, a bad situation. But out of all the riots, all the things that happened, they put together a collaborative board to look at the issues of Santa Barbara and Isla Vista and realize that this is a unique place. This is something that we can't do things the way we've done in the past. And again, that was one of those major turning points. Something really bad had to happen for people to sit down and talk and get together and come up with solutions. As a result, out of that came, to me, was a great thing, was the Isla Vista Foot Patrol Office. And were you a part of that at all when you worked here for the year?
I did some assignments out in Isla Vista, but I was not assigned here.
Okay. Well, they had the Isla Vista Foot Patrol Office. That started in the 70s. And that was a great opportunity for law enforcement to step out of the patrol cars, actually go out with the philosophy of being in the community, being a part of Isla Vista, talking to the public, being a part of what's going on out there one-on-one with the public, getting out of the concept of just police cars driving by, getting on foot, really actually to the old school way of doing things way back in the day when the cops walked a beat. Well, getting the officers out there riding a bike or walking the beat. Great, great effort. Great first step. In your opinion, as far as what you've seen over the years, do you think that was the right direction to go? Do you think it's still something that's working well and has opportunities to do even better things?
Oh, I absolutely think it works well. And it is nationally known as the first true community policing project in the United States. And the fact that it's still here, I think is a testament to its sustainability and the fact that it is a unique model. Every place that I've been likes to say that it's unique, but Isla Vista truly is. I've visited 32 states. I've been on Indian reservations. I've been on campuses around the country. And Isla Vista is unique if for no other reason than, in effect, it is an unincorporated public island surrounded by the University of California, which is presents its own challenges. And I think, quite honestly, the strength of the foot patrol was a recognition that while this is a it is a public area, it is a jurisdiction under the auspices of the county of Santa Barbara, it also in many ways is a de facto student housing project. And your vast majority of your residents today are students either at the university or at City College, which means several things. One is that they come into this community very often with little or no connection to the community or its history. They stay for a period of time and they move on. There's a continual sort of cycling of people. And so the result is, I think it increases the challenge to build systems and approaches that sort of impact the culture in a very direct way. Because ultimately, I think the students / residents will define for themselves sort of how this is going to work. And so as we were talking about earlier, you really, other than the most obvious, you know, obedience to the sort of part one laws, you know, do not hurt each other, do not steal from each other, et cetera, the social quality of law enforcement, the social, really has to come from the students and the residents. And I think some of the things that are underway now that the UCPD has done, I think the fact that the UCPD and the sheriff's office, and used to be the highway patrol as well, occupied the same space, mm-hmm. and devise kind of a common policing strategy. And as time has gone on, the students are more involved. Ivy Safe, UCIV, other student-based organizations that sort of help impose the sort of social order that the residents want is very important and valuable.
And one of the things we have seen is that over the years, you do have that regular rotation of students coming through here. They're here for their first year on campus or in downtown Santa Barbara, or they live in Isla Vista. But after 4 years, they're moving on. So there's a constant cycle of students. Yesterday was a great example of one of the challenges for Isla Vista is that I was asked to assist with a class and actually sat down and pretended to be a board of supervisor member. And that was challenging in itself. But the students were presenting ideas of things that they would like to see change in Isla Vista, or things that they would like to see happen that would help improve Isla Vista and be beneficial for the community, the university, Santa Barbara County as a whole. And it was interesting to listen because they had some really great ideas. They talked about community centers. They talked about UCIV, how to expand different programs in Isla Vista and help marginalized folks out there. There are great opportunities that the students are coming up with. But the sad part, unfortunately, what I kind of fell inside was that these are also some of the same ideas that they've come up with 4 years ago, 8 years ago, and they're starting the same path and they make the same mistakes and they move on and it gets dropped and forgotten about until somebody else says, hey, I got this idea. The challenge is really how do we develop a community that can actually take some of these ideas and keep them running? And Foot Patrol Office is a perfect example of something that has kept running. It's been going on since 1970. That's 47 years of just plugging away, improving, changing, adapting. And I think it's a testament to the fact that the Santa Barbara County Sheriff's Department has been dedicated to realizing that Isla Vista is a unique environment and putting forth the effort to do that. The university and the CHP, which was great when they had officers stationed out here, it was a great collaborative effort and really worked forward. Now that we had the issues of 2014, that I look at as another major change in kind of the culture in Isla Vista. We had a period that, unfortunately, with the situation that happened out there, not only the riots, but with the shootings, all these difficult things happened in Isla Vista, it really forced the community to really sit down again and come together. And it's always kind of that silver lining, I guess, to the thunderstorm, is that the community came together in more ways than I've ever seen before. In the 27 years I've been here, that was the time that I've seen more members of the business community, members of the long-term residents, the different various groups in Isla Vista and the campuses and Santa Barbara County all came together and they worked as a team. Lieutenant Plastino, Lieutenant Commander Plastino, was out here, did a great job talking to people and really being a part of that and the growth. How do we sustain that? How is that something that does the law enforcement need to take the lead on that, or how do we look at sustaining programs like that?
You know, somebody once defined culture as the way we do things. And one of the things that I've certainly been focused on in my relatively short time with the sheriff's office is this idea that the culture of Isla Vista needs to shift. It doesn't need to change dramatically, but it needs to shift to a recognition of everybody being responsible for everybody else's safety. I think in point of fact, a couple of things. If in fact the population is, to oversimplify things, is changing at a rate of 25% a year, roughly, then somehow the culture of weekends, the culture of locals only parties, the things that we have implemented in partnership with the university and the county for big events like Deltopia and Halloween really needs to permeate through the other 50 weekends of the year. It needs to become part of how things are done in Isla Vista, how people care for each other in Isla Vista. The challenge, I think, is that you have a group of young people, and I raised three sons. They all went to college in very different places, and they all had some kind of thing happen their first year. You know, fortunately, not too serious. But for many young people, it's their first sort of step away from home. It's their first time of being in an unsupervised environment, and so if the supervision is not going to come from the police, not going to come from parents, and not going to come at least directly from the university, it really has to come from their peers. And so we, I think, have a responsibility to help sort of define what is the culture of Isla Vista, what is acceptable conduct in Isla Vista, and what is not.
Yes. And I look back for an example I gave talking about the students I had an opportunity to work with the last couple of days. It really brought the question to myself as far as what can I do as part of the community, not just as law enforcement, as part of the community, to actually have an opportunity to talk about. Because they talked about some great ideas and great concepts and things like that, that I thought, wow, it'd be great if we talk about a sobering center. But we sat down early on in the process and talked about, hey, here's what's happened in the past. Here's what's gone on. And here's the things you can avoid and actually maybe get this a little bit further and something closer to that will be workable. So the pitfalls to avoid. Building that trust with the community to start that conversation early is an ongoing challenge. Community-based policing really is focused on not law enforcement leading the charge as far as we're going to crush crime, but actually getting the community to lead the charge, the community to come with some ideas and help be one of the leaders as far as pointing out where the problems are, helping law enforcement resolve these issues, and working as a collaborative effort. How can we work with student groups and people in Isla Vista as far as keep building that and come together and build that trust?
Well, there's probably more than the two I'm going to mention, but two avenues come to mind. One is the newly formed Community Services District, and we will see where that goes. Obviously, there's some funding questions and some other things, but it may well be that that's a one of the things that over the years I've seen is various attempts to bring self-governance to Isla Vista. And there are some challenges, both fiscal and political, about how to do that. So the Community Service District is one. The other is the greater involvement of the, and this is where I think law enforcement can play a key role, is for both the university and City College, as well as the landlords, to understand that there are consequences for inappropriate behavior. And the university and to some extent City College, I think, are doing a much better job of that. And I think one of the reasons that Deltopia and Halloween have become manageable is the landlords have been willing to write basically consequence clauses in their lease agreements to say, hey, if you trash my apartment, if you do certain things here, you're going to be evicted and you won't have a place to live.
And that's a challenge too, because the students have always kind of had this us versus them mentality with the landlords as well. I personally have seen where if landlords have come down and said, okay, hey, here are the rules up front. This is what the consequences are. This is what we're doing. The students can have all the rights to protect themselves as well using the tenants union and so forth. But when they're talking and being very upfront, there seems to be a little better communication and better expectation of what the results are going to be. But it really comes down to that key word of communication.
You know, I have been convinced most of my law enforcement career that most people, regardless of age, regardless of ethnicity, regardless of location, most people want to do the right thing. Most people are simply looking for an excuse to do the right thing. Most people don't want to hurt each other. They don't want themselves to be hurt. They don't want their property to be damaged. But there is a tendency, particularly if you are away from home for the first time, I think, to say, hey, you know, you're going to test the boundaries. You're going to see what life is all about. And that's cool. There's nothing wrong with that.
That's normal. That's actually what you're supposed to do.
Absolutely. But the challenge, I think, for the people who have lived here for 3 and 4 years is to say, these are the things that we do, and these are the things that we don't do.
Right. And going into Isla Vista, especially when I was a 21-year-old officer going out there and dealing with students that were pretty much my same age, kind of peers to some extent, it was a challenge. And it helped me in the fact that I actually spent time in Isla Vista before then to go out there and not go into the mental, I'm going to cite, but try to communicate, try to say, okay, remember, they're just doing the same things I did a short time ago. And when you talk to most officers, they're quite honestly, they're doing the same stuff that we all used to do when we were younger. And we get frustrated because we're adults. We grow up and we have this mentality that, you know, our kids are perfect, but those other kids. And we kind of forget that, you know, our kids are doing the same thing the other kids are doing. We're all making the same mistakes. We all grow up and do some of the silly things and stupid things. And
one of one of the paradoxes of law enforcement is that for the most part, everybody wants rigid, objective, unbending law enforcement, as long as it's directed at somebody else. But when it comes to themselves,
yes,
we all want compassion and understanding and a recognition of our common humanity. And so somehow we have to blend that. We have to find a way philosophically to blend those two points of view.
Yes, it's definitely true. And it's a challenge. And the things that I've seen over the years is that as the shifts continue and we continue to adapt and accept more and more ability to respond differently to situations, mental health crisis and so forth, has really also changed the culture of law enforcement, the way we're dealing with things. And we're learning, we're adapting. I think as long as we keep doing that, I think we'll hopefully keep working towards a better working relationship with community and pushing community-based policing to, you know, new levels and new future goals. Kind of really, in my mind, UCIV is a perfect model of having the community take care of a lot of the basic situations out there, and law enforcement is there to support and help. And I'd like to see that in the future. I hope that's the way we're going. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. It's been great having you here.
It's been my privilege. Thank you.
Yes. I don't know if you want to do a little plug. I believe you mentioned once before you have a class.
I do. Professor Jeff Raymond and I, in the winter quarter, teach a Sociology 175, Policing in Society. And I know that it's been picked up again for a third year, so hopefully students will come down and take a look.
I had the opportunity to speak in one of the classes at one point, and it's actually really fascinating because the students were very excited, and they talked about how much they actually enjoyed the class. So great work with that, and great opportunities like that. When you have an opportunity, if you go out there and you see law enforcement, whether you're a student, adult, young person, whatever, if you see the cops out there, go up there and ask them questions. Talk to them. Question authority is my motto. And just go out there and really, you know, bring on the tough questions too. Don't be afraid to say, hey, I'm curious about this. You know, if you have a respectful conversation, you'll be surprised that the cops actually do want to talk to people. We like actually answering some of those questions. And, you know, who knows? Have a cup of coffee and maybe a donut, and we'll get together and talk about it.
When we talk about community policing, I think it's important to remember that the police are a community as well.
Yes.
And they are part of this community. And we all need to respond accordingly. But I really appreciate the opportunity to spend time with you today.
Well, I hope we get a chance to do it again because there's so much more that we could talk about. And I know you're gone for hours, but this has been a great opportunity. Thank you very much for coming here. I appreciate everybody for listening to us today. This is Inside Isla Vista on 91.9 FM KCSB. Tune in Wednesdays at 5 p.m. to find out what's happening inside Isla Vista. And catch up on past episodes on SoundCloud. Search for KCSB FM. I'm Lieutenant Mark Signa with the UCPD. And thanks to my guest, Barney. I'm so glad you came here. I can't wait to do this again. The Undersheriff of Santa Barbara County, Barney Malekian. This is Inside Isla Vista. Our theme music is Siesta by Jazzer, and I can't wait to do this again. Thanks so much for listening, and have a great and safe time out in Isla Vista.